From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Stephen came to me and we established Squidward's laugh. And he had this antic in mind where he was going to accordion that big nose in a rhythmic fashion. And so he explained that to me. So I went, you know, and he said, that's it. Bye-bye. You know.
Welcome to SpongeBob Binge Pants,
Nickelodeon's official podcast about all things SpongeBob.
I'm Hector Navarro.
And I'm Frankie Grande.
Hector, I'm so excited that we have Roger Bumpus, who plays Squidward Tentacles, on our show with us today, because as we've discussed so many times, I think the older I get, the more I'm relating to Squidward Tentacles.
Frankie, I just realized this. We have talked to so many of the great voice actors behind the show. We're collecting all of our favorite characters, but we have yet to talk to someone who voices a character from the pilot Help Wanted until today.
Yes.
That's Roger. That's Squidward. He was there from the very, very, very beginning. So this is going to be awesome. I can't wait to get nerdy and geeky with Roger Bumpus. Here he is, folks. It's been so great to rewatch the show as adults, because Frankie and I were watching it when we were younger. But to watch it now, Frankie and I have related to Squidward more than ever, and I think is one of the reasons that the show and all of the dynamics of the characters are so great.
Well, thank you. Now, you just touched on something that I come across quite often, and that is when you're a young person, you identify with SpongeBob, his boyish qualities, his innocence, and his fun-loving quality. And then when you get to be a young adult, you got to pay the bills, you got to have a job, you got to do all these responsible things, you learn what life is really about. You instantly turn into Squidward, and the sympathy is right there with him. So it's I see this all the time.
Oh no, SpongeBob! What could he possibly want?
Go, SpongeBob! Go, SpongeBob! Go, Sal!
We are talking about the first season. We're talking about the origins of the show. We've talked to all of these amazing folks who've been there from the beginning. Roger, do you remember your audition for Squidward? What was that like?
Yes, I do. I remember that day. Back then, things were very, very primitive and analog, and you had options of only going into your agent's office and recording, or going to a third-party audition place. You couldn't do it at home like we're doing it right now. And I went in, and I remember that day. I looked at the breakdown, and there was a verbal description of him: sarcastic, artsy, finicky, blah, blah, blah. And then I saw the look on his face, which has this big honking nose. And that just kind of shaped how I would perform his character. And I put him in the back, making him a bit nasal because he had that big nose and sarcastic. Oh, please. I have no soul. So it just kind of came together. And fortunately, that's what Steve wanted. And so he began very, very monotonal. That was his signature. That was the thing that I hung everything on, was that blah, 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 blah. And then as we went along through 22 years, they gave me more and more different things to do, so that I spread the wings. And his character became much more fleshed out through the years. And now he's more me than he was at the beginning. He used to be an alter ego, and now I'm his alter ego.
There's like two parts of my brain, like the part of my brain that I want to show to the world and the part of my brain that actually just wants to constantly talk to me all day long. And I realize that that's very Squidward. Like, I have an inner Squidward, and
very
it's
much so.
Amazing.
Yeah, we all have that inner Squidward, that frustrated, sometimes condescending, sarcastic, just I'm better and yet no one recognizes me. kind of attitude, and always getting the short end of the stick wherever you go. Only a few times a Squidward win, just like life.
Yeah. One of my favorite Squidward moments so far that we've discussed in season one is when Squidward punches the guy who doesn't accept the delivery of the pizza.
He ate it all in one bite. Another one? Look, I told you, little friend, I ain't paying for that!
Well, this one's on the...
Did he change his mind?
Hey, Shorthead.
That's the first time you ever see that Squidward knows he's gone a little too far, and he really does have a small amount of affection, which he will never admit, of course, for
yes.
SpongeBob. And when other people, this is like when you're a kid in your family, and you say, my dad's a real jerk, and then your friend says, yeah, he's a real jerk. Well, you can't say that because
right.
you're not in the family.
Right.
You know, I abuse SpongeBob all the time, but when somebody else does, then I take up for
right.
him. Or when I know that I've gone a little too far.
Right.
Like when I gave him the pie with a bomb in it, you know, and then I dying for pie.
Those are some of my favorite moments are when Squidward goes a little too far and realizes, maybe I should reel it in.
The pie you ate was a bomb.
What pie?
The one I left sitting on the counter this morning that I bought from pirates for $25 and I didn't know it was a bomb and you ate it. Pie!
Oh, you mean this pie! I was saving it in my pocket for us to share. Let's eat! Oops!
What was your initial reaction to the pilot, like way back in the day when you first saw it or when you first read it?
Well, you know, people say, ask me, did anybody think it would be this big? And so I said, of course not. No, it was just another audition. Just another. You go to an audition, you do it, and you never think, hey, I did pretty good. That's a kiss of death for one thing. And you go and you forget it. Then I got the part. We did the pilot. I got a copy of the pilot. I took it home and played it for my family, and they fell asleep.
Oh, no.
And it was only a year or two later when I was just casually talking to somebody on the street, and I said I worked on this show, and their eyes got big as saucers, and they said, wow, you guys are so hip, that I knew that we were kind of onto something. And that's when I started collecting all the merchandise. But yeah, nobody knew that it would be this. I liken it to, if I can make the comparison, the Beatles, in that certain groups, certain people, certain projects come along that are just right for their time. And this was, everybody else was half an hour shows. We are a throwback to Looney Tunes, of 11-minute cartoons, shorts. And we focus on what makes animation, like the distortion of characters. You get hit by a frying pan and your face takes the shape of the frying pan. We focus on that a lot, and more so in our spinoffs recently. So we just came along at a right time and just kind of clicked with young people and older people. And just like I use the comparison all the time, Looney Tunes, that it appeals to little kids because it's color.
Yep.
And then teenagers get a joke they didn't get when they were five, and adults get another one when they didn't get when they were a teenager. So it's kind of like a parable that it appeals to a lot of people, a lot of different people for different reasons, different ages, and different backgrounds.
Exclusively on Paramount Plus. Get ready to explore like never before.
Swiper, no swiping!
Oh, man!
Swing into action.
We need your help.
Woohoo!
Yay!
With a girl who put adventure on the map.
I don't think I can do it, Dora.
I'll protect you, Boots. Together, we got this.
Todos juntos!
Yay!
Dora, the brand new series. Stream with your family now, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Talked to Teal Wang, who's the color queen of the SpongeBob universe. Teal is amazing. And we heard that Squidward's color was really tough to nail down, that originally his name was Octoward, that he was purple. Like, is this true? Is there proto-versions of Squidward that you remember before we got to that beautiful, unique design and color and personality?
I do have copies on my Stephen Hillenburg wall in my collection here of the original design for Squidward, and it's very, very different than what they settled on. He had a bulbous head, but not the way you see it now. He just looked very sad, and then they brought him up a little bit and got a different posture in there. The Octoword thing, now, I don't know that that's a Nickelodeon thing. I always claimed it as my own joke. And because people will ask, well, is Squidward an octopus? And I say, well, yes, he is an octopus. And they say, well, why is he called Squidward? And I say, well, Octoword just didn't cut it. You know, and the color, I don't know about this color thing. People say, oh, look, that's a blue like Squidward. And I'm like, no, he's green. He's green. Mm-hmm. And I've seen images of him, official images of him in both tones. So I have no idea what his color really is.
It's like that dress that was blue and white at the same time. That dress from a few years ago, you know, everybody has different perceptions of color and everything, but.
It's like those special car paint jobs that you look at it from the east and it's purple. You look at it from the west and it's like a green, you know? Yeah.
Roger, have you run into fans that are like marine biologists or scientists today and they're like, I am in my profession because of SpongeBob?
Well, all the marine biologists that I know have a new career in animation after Steven.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said, to heck with this wet stuff, I'm going to make some money in animation.
That's a great point. Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah, you know, Steven always incorporated, if you look at the various residents of Bikini Bottom, you'll see all kinds of real versions of fish, the flat fish that have the eye on one side only. And I'll bet, you know, you can learn something about marine biology by watching our show. I bet a lot of people didn't realize that fish walk underwater and they have campfires and buses and you know, and fast food places. You didn't know that, I bet you. And all their houses are discarded automobile mufflers.
Yeah.
Yes. Go, self.
Mr. Krabs! Hurry, Mr. Krabs, before it's too late. I gotta tell you about
this. Permission to come aboard, Captain!
I've been training my whole life.
Do you have any fond memories from working on the very beginning of the series?
I remember some weirdness. I remember that very first day we had this one little recording studio that we recorded at. And I remember the first time I was watching Tom do his character. He did the character. Okay, so that's what he sounds like. I gotcha. And Tom has a liberty in the SpongeBob's character to go into completely different voices. He can do a heroic person or what, you know, whatever. And he did that. And I kind of looked at him and went, what are you doing? That's not the character. You just completely broke the character. What are you, an idiot? You know, and then I realized that's totally allowable for SpongeBob. And then on the very same day, Clancy Brown, who I just love, he's a great guy. But his resume preceded him. And he has this great look, great acting chops, and he's a teddy bear. But we all, we joke with him that we were afraid of him when we first saw him. You know, we didn't. I don't want to chat him up. No, just whatever. You know, he's fine. And then, of course, we learned he's just the best guy in the world. That day, Steven came to me and we established Squidward's laugh, and he had this antic in mind where he was going to accordion that big nose in a rhythmic fashion. And so he explained that to me. So I went, you know, and he said, that's it. Bye-bye. You know, he was that easy to work with. Okay, you got it. Bye-bye. Next
question.
That
is so cool, though. Like, you got to create Squidward's laugh.
Yeah.
Like, that's yours.
Well, not only is the laugh yours, but I read that you were also the inspiration for another element of Squidward, which is his really cool bicycle that he rides. It first appeared in the first movie. Tell us the story behind this bicycle, and do you remember what it was like to work on the movie? You guys did 3 seasons, and then the movie happens. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I ride what's called a recumbent bicycle. If you can imagine a chopper, which is the geometric model for this particular bicycle, you're kind of laying back a little bit. The word recumbent means reclining, and it's very, very, very comfortable. It's once you do that, you won't go back to upright bicycles. And I was riding in the park one day, and Steven Hillenburg and his son were walking by, and he sees me on the bike. We stopped and chat, and then I let him ride the bike. Soon after that, they decided that whenever Squidward rides a bike, it's going to be a recumbent.
We've been talking to the cast and the crew, and everybody has sort of different points of realization of, oh, this is going to be a massive hit, or this is this phenomenon, or what have you. What was that moment for you, and what was it like to be able to star in this big movie that came out after the third season?
When I saw that, when you walk into a store, the merchandise is everywhere, not just in the toy things, but in the automotive section, in the greeting card section, in the bath section. And I saw, wow, this is really being promoted like crazy. There must be something going on. And I started seeing the ratings and starting seeing the word of mouth and stuff. And I said, wow, this is really, really catching on. So I said, well, I'm going to ride this pony. I'm going to collect everything. So, and as far as that first movie goes, that was wonderful. We, some of us have this little, because if you remember that first movie, everybody except Sponge and Pat were kind of taken out of the movie. We were frozen we were, taken. And so it was just a road movie with Sponge and Pat. So when the second movie was announced, we kind of just went up to Steven and said, can we be in this one, please?
Yeah.
and of course, they did much, much better for that for us.
Yeah, you guys were superheroes. You guys were definitely along for the ride in the subsequent movies. Yeah, definitely.
Look at me. Yes. I'm a god. Yes.
So, okay, is it time? Should we talk about your collection now?
Well, considering I keep talking about it, we may as well get it over with.
So, do you collect all things SpongeBob or just Squidward?
All things SpongeBob. There's only a few things that I haven't collected that are just too big. I saw a kid's picnic table, and I just didn't have room for that. But when I saw so much stuff out there, I went, I'd like to start a collection of some kind, and this is the prime candidate right here. And so I am literally going to submit it to Guinness, and because I really do believe I have it's not just merchandise, it's memorabilia, because we do a movie and we have all the cast sign the posters, and I've got that, everybody on the cast has that, but nobody else can have that sort of a thing. And fans do a lot of artwork, and they give it to me. Yes. So I've got a whole wall room of just fan artwork. And there's some between 3,000 and 4,000 pieces that I have right now. And the handsome Squidward is one of the crowd favorites.
Yes.
The action figure that. But the top of the entire thing, I think, besides the Monopoly set, which you see your little pewter player piece, and that's such an iconic thing to have that, man. I just love that. But it's the toilet training kit that I am most proud of, I think. Yeah. And I'm very proud to say that I am just about to master it.
Yes. So,
good.
You keep at it, Roger.
That comes in handy.
Does that toilet training kit comes with your guys' voices? Because I don't know if that would be encouraging or weird if your guys' voices were like, come on, kids.
I never thought of that.
It's an idea for Nickelodeon merchandising. Is they're like, yes, we can.
Whoa, kid, more fiber, please. One thing that is something that no one else can have, and that is ever so often the artists for SpongeBob will do a small gallery collection of things, and they'll have them in the hallways of Nickelodeon, and they sell them. And I snarf them up right away. I've got my whole wall of fan art plus Nickelodeon art, and it's absolutely, which brings me to this, this is life imitating art here. When you see Squidward's house, he's so narcissistic in a certain respect that he only paints self-portraits. So all his interior walls have various versions of him. Well, in the course of my collection, which is the wall stuff is only Squidward, my house has become Squidward's house. It's all self-portraits of Squidward in various iterations. It's my secret conceited quality. That's not really me, but it's something I do on television.
Yeah, who is it?
Patron, it's Captain Doug Quasar. I'm locked out. I need you to open the ship's door.
I'm sorry, Doug. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What? Of course you can. It's an order. I'm the captain.
I don't think so. The captain always has his keys with him, and his keys are right here. Okay, gotta go. Oh, maybe the real captain's lost. I better go find him!
Open up, you junky old star toaster!
Nope, no captain there.
The Patrick Star Show, I think, is so remarkable and so zany. Like, what is it like getting to now have lives on other shows?
Yeah, it's expanding your personal universe, creative universe, and the presentation universe. And you get to just really spread your wings. And well, here's an aspect of Squidward at Camp Coral. He's a younger person,
right? Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a counselor. He's a little older than the rest of the campers. And so what I always wanted to do was to give some sort of indication of his being a teenager, like, I'm the oldest person in this room, you know, have the voice crack, you know, yeah, adolescence, yeah, you know,
break.
And so you get this, you get as an audience member backstory, we get backstory to create. So it's always something new. And wow. Even though it's a familiar, yeah. Much loved character that from an actor's standpoint, it's so new every time we do it because it's in a wholly different universe. Hopefully this is just as much fun for the audience members exploring these aspects as it is for us to try to create them.
Today's the big day, Squidward. Don't want to be late. Gotta hurry. Hold it. Hold everything. I would not want to miss this. The day SpongeBob moves! I can't believe it's really happening.
Don't worry, Squidward. I'll come visit you.
Don't try to cheer me up, SpongeBob. Please.
I've fallen, even more in love with Squidward also as I've gotten older because I realized, like, he is just, like, a tormented artist, mm-hmm. You know? Like, he's just, like, he just wants to paint and play the clarinet, but that he still has to work at a fast food joint.
He is underpaid, underappreciated, underwater. Oh. As people, you know, that are struggling to find their place on this planet can relate to, he is what a lot of people go through. In an extreme example, of course, but everybody goes through this frustration and this, I was not appreciated, you know, kind of thing. But he's just the epitome for a lot of people of what life sometimes can be. But he does succeed occasionally too. He's not a total hopeless entity. He does succeed. All it takes is a little canned bread and house fancy and some Earl Grey tea or chamomile tea, as I call it. And he's happy and peace and quiet. That's all he wants is peace and quiet and a little recognition.
Talked to the amazing Mary Jo Catlett, the voice of Mrs. Puff.
Oh,
she
yes.
told us a story where she was once recognized by her voice, and she also told us that sometimes kids ask her why she's so mean to SpongeBob. Do kids ever ask you the same, or do they ever say, "Hey, I feel bad for Squidward"? Like, what's the kind of kid response that you've experienced?
I get both those responses, and as far as the recognizing the voice, I have to tell you this: when the show first started, and I was collecting my merchandise, I was in the checkout thing, and I had a whole bunch of SpongeBob stuff. This little teenage guy was in the checkout, and he said, "Well, somebody must like SpongeBob." And I said, "Yeah, I kind of work on the show." And he says, can you do the voice?" I said, and I did the voice, and he goes in typical bored teenager quality. "Yeah, it's pretty good."
But from a teenager, that is high praise, Roger.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know he loved the show.
I knew he did. Yeah. I get both those requests from people, questions rather. Why is he the way he is with SpongeBob? And my answer is always, because he's annoying. And so it's the same answer. It's what we do. All the characters in the show have a very distinct category. You got the miser, you got the megalomaniac, you got the artist, and the technician and whatever. And so nobody really steps on each other as far as the characters go. And it's a challenge to have them interact sometimes and have that little overlap of characteristics. So it's one of the writing challenges for everybody. But we're all very distinctive in our little niche of who we are. If there's an art thing going on, Squidward has to be a part of that. You know, if there's money involved, Krabs has to be a part of that. You know,
talking about all those dynamics, Roger, like these characters are also amazing. They also have such great dynamics with one another, and there really isn't overlap. I mean, even Squidward at his worst, he's not the antagonist of the show. That's Plankton. Yeah. Right? So, you know, we know what kind of role Squidward has with this friend group and this cast of characters. Do you have a favorite dynamic to play with, whether it's Squidward and SpongeBob, Squidward and Patrick, Squidward and Krabs? Like, which one of those is your favorite to kind of play around with?
Yes, this I tell people this a lot, though, that I have Tom and I have a kind of a rapport, and it relates to the old 1950s show, The Honeymooners, with Jackie Gleason and Art Carney. Art Carney was the SpongeBob kind of character, the goofy kind of character, and he would oftentimes go off on a repetitive gag, like if you're trying to sign something, he would, you know, throw the arm out to get the cuff of the sleeve up a bit, and he would do it again, and then again, to the point of surrealist. And then finally, Jackie Gleason would have enough of this, and he would go, "All right!" And that's exactly the dynamic that we do quite often with SpongeBob and Squidward. And we, as two actors, interact quite well. We have this little chemistry, that's all. But we have the same thing with everybody else, but I just noticed that in the times that it's only SpongeBob and Squidward. So that's the one that I like.
Is there a dynamic that you haven't explored yet?
Well, I haven't really had that in mind, because and it's a good thing, because the writers keep coming up with those new interactions.
Yeah.
And so there was the one time when Squidward fell in love with this girl, and he had to have, and he was just frozen, and he was incapacitated, and so SpongeBob had to do a practice date with him, and that's a very, very fun episode too.
Oh, no, you don't, Patrick. You cannot just barge in here like this. SpongeBob and I are in the middle of a practice date.
So, do you hang out here often?
Well, this is my home, silly.
Excuse me. How is this supposed to help me on my real date? Which, by the way, begins in 5 minutes.
The writers keep coming up with, because they have to. Long-running comedy shows have a voracious appetite for material, and you've got to come up with new things. Very surreal. This is what I love about Mr. Lawrence's writing, because it's way off there. I see some of his scripts, and I say, do you often write in an opium den? But all the writers are really, really great. I mean, I just know that he wrote this one particular thing, and I went, my gosh, Doug.
Yeah.
Decaf, you know?
Yeah. They're out
decaf,
there. That's right.
That's so funny.
It's way out there.
One of my personal favorites is Squilliam, Fancy Son. Like, that whole episode, the fact that you have met Squilliam several times, that you have this kind of counterpart is just, that was delightful.
Squilliam, Fancy Son from band class?
I hear you're playing the cash register now.
But sometimes. How's the unibrow?
It's big and valuable. I'm the leader of a big fancy band now, and we're supposed to play the Bubble Bowl next week.
The ba-ba-ba, the ba-ba-ba.
That's right. I'm living your dream, Squidward.
Yeah, D. Bradley Baker is an absolutely very prolific voice actor.
He Wonderful. Can
do. He's one of our, what I call, utility cast members that do all these characters that sometimes are just one character. Him and Serena Irwin also, and he does Bubble Bass and Perch Perkins.
Yes.
Those are recurring characters, but he does all kinds of just one-time things, and he's very, very good. And so, but his Squilliam is spot on. Everybody in the show has had to do Squidward at some time. When I had the early episodes of going to Squidville, the entire cast had to do the various residents there. And so
fun.
I feel so ununique, because everyone can do my character.
But Roger,
no one like you.
One like you. I mean, it's true. Like, Tom is just perfect for SpongeBob. You know, Bill is Patrick. You guys are so perfect in these roles, and it's so fun to hear everybody doing the impressions of everyone else.
Squidward, we finally found you.
Get off me. I'm not Squidward.
Are you Squidward now?
Grievances! This town is a grievance! There should be a log and so many stuck-up tightwads living in one place! This city needs to be destroyed! Or at least painted a different color.
FYI, you don't have to live here, you know.
Hey, you're right, and I'm leaving ASAP.
Are you Squidward?
No.
Roger, do you have a favorite type of SpongeBob episode?
Ooh.
A type of episode, what I love really is, first of all, the range that Squidward is required to perform in. He is the sarcastic observer of the insanity behind him. And when he has that comment of, got them both, you know, kind of thing. And then the opposite end of that is when things get too much for him and he gets to go apoplectic and I get to scream a whole lot.
Yes.
I do love to scream. It's very therapeutic. I save a lot on psychiatry fees. And so that is what I really do love is when he talks, but not long-winded. I never get long-winded passages of dialogue anyway, mm-hmm. but it's when that just little talk thing that and that observation thing, that's what I really do like about Squidward. But that one episode when SpongeBob discovers Mermaid Man's utility belt and he zaps Squidward and it shrinks him down to action figure size and he keeps trying to scream to transform him back by pushing the buttons again, and each time he does it, it's more horrible thing. No skin on fire, no bones, whatever. And you had to scream each time. From that point on, they learned that I could scream, and they make me scream every episode.
Roger, it's no question that SpongeBob has left its mark on pop culture. But how did you react when you found out that Iron Man called a bad guy from outer space Squidward?
Oh, that was great.
How cool was that? That Tony Stark watches SpongeBob SquarePants.
I absolutely love that kind of a thing. In my collection, I might add, I have a book of newspaper comic strips through the years that mention SpongeBob.
Wow.
Everything.
Oh my
goodness. And that in itself is a testament to the iconic status of the show. It's like Monopoly pieces. If when you're in a comic strip, and the reference to your show is something that the artists and the cartoonist thinks is a funny, good thing, you've arrived. That's great.
Has Squidward been a Jeopardy answer? Has to have been, right?
Yes, it has. I don't know if it's Squidward has. I think it has. But SpongeBob, for sure, has been a Jeopardy thing.
Yeah.
Where do you go from there?
Speaking of where we go from here, where do you see the future of SpongeBob SquarePants going?
I am still amazed that we still have legs. And I have six. Mm-hmm. And that people still like us. They are still watching theirs. And we are multi-generational. Definitely two generations. But I've seen a third generation now.
Wow.
So, you know, it's to be a part of that legacy, to be a part of something so literally iconic in American culture is something to be exceedingly grateful.
Roger, we're grateful for you, man. This has been such a joy for Frank and I to get to talk to you. We thank you. We hope you know that, like, we love this character. We love the show. We appreciate everything that you guys have been doing over the past 22 years now, and can't wait to see where it goes from here. Thank you so much, man. Roger, you're hilarious, man. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And just for my own personal feelings, I'm hoping for the future that the SpongeBob universe lasts just a little longer than the pyramids.
Yes.
Roger Bumpus, everybody, did not disappoint. He's funnier than Squidward. He was so hilarious and so gracious and so grateful and thankful.
I'm not usually starstruck, even like with Mary Jo, who I love so much, but there was something about Roger that just made me kind of like a little bit starstruck. I think it's because of the character also. Like, Squidward takes himself so seriously. So I was like, oh no, like maybe Roger does too. But he was so wonderful and
he's
so
a crack up.
He's kind.
Great. Once again, huge thanks to Roger Bumpus. Folks, we hope that you enjoyed. He was really hysterical.
Yeah, he really was.
We hope that you guys liked that interview. Let us know what you thought. Let us know what your favorite part of talking to Roger Bumpus was. Let us know about your favorite Squidward moment. And we're going to be back with more interviews, more episode breakdowns, and more SpongeBob binge pants next time. We'll see you then. Bye.